Our reading this morning is from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 9. And it is the story of, it's Luke's story of Jesus and the Transfiguration. So what has happened up until now is Jesus has been gathering his disciples to him. He's done some healings, he's done some teaching. Of course, this in Luke, the gospel begins with the birth story and then his time as a child when he visits the temple when he is 12. And then there's the calls of the disciples and some early teaching, and kind of finishes with the feeding of the 5,000. So at the beginning of chapter 9, Jesus feeds the 5,000, which is one, of course, of his most well-known miracles. And then Jesus goes off to the mountain, and he's going to take Peter, James, and John with him and as witnesses. And so here is how Luke tells us the story. About 8 days after Jesus said these things, he took Peter, John, and James and went up onto a mountain to pray. As he was praying, the appearance of his face changed and his clothing flashed white like lightning. Two men, Moses and Elijah, were talking with him. They were clothed with heavenly splendor and spoke about Jesus' departure, which he would achieve in Jerusalem. Peter and those with him were almost overcome by sleep, but they managed to stay awake and saw his glory as well as the two men with him. As the two men were about to leave Jesus, Peter said to him, "Master, it's good that we are here. We should construct three shrines, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." But he didn't know what he was saying. Peter was speaking when a cloud overshadowed them, and as they entered the cloud, they were overcome with awe. Then a voice came from the cloud and said, "This is my son, my chosen one, listen to him." Even as the voice spoke, Jesus was found alone. They were speechless and at that time told no one what they had seen. The next day, when Jesus, Peter, James, and John had come down from the mountains, a large crowd met Jesus. A man from the crowd shouted, "Teacher, I beg you to take a look at my son, my only child. Look, a spirit seizes him, and without warning, he screams. It shakes him and causes him to foam at the mouth. It tortures him and rarely leaves him alone. I begged your disciples to throw it out, but they couldn't." Jesus answered, "You faithless and crooked generation, how long will I be with you and put up with you? Bring your son here." While he was coming, the demon threw him down and shook him violently. Jesus spoke harshly to the unclean spirit, healed the child, and gave him back to his father. Everyone was overwhelmed by God's greatness. Hear what these ancient words say to us through the time. Thanks be to God. So I was just talking to the folks up at DeWitton this morning, and we were chatting about me coming to do worship this morning for everybody. And someone said, "Do you get to lead worship very often?" I said, "No." I said, "Mostly because I'm busy. I have another job that keeps me going." And I said, "But Julia often asks me to preach again. I think it's because I'm an easy target because my office is right above hers." And I said, "But you know, I noticed a pattern with Julia. Last time I preached, it was Reign of Christ the King Sunday. This time it's Transfiguration. I think she's ducking out of the hard ones." When I was a student in seminary and I was doing my internship and I was working with a fully ordained minister, I noticed that I would get the hard ones to preach. I'd get Transfiguration Sunday, Reign of Christ the King, all of those kind of ones that make us have to think hard. And I think Julia's doing the same with me. She's making me preach the hard ones. And partly it's because I think in some ways, I think they're hard. Not this is why Julia's not here, because she's actually busy preparing Lent for you all. But I think part of the reason we think these are hard Sundays to preach is that we get tied up in theological knots about them. You know, what does it mean for Jesus to be king? What does it mean for Jesus to be transformed? There are volumes and volumes of books in theological libraries that talk about this particular moment in Jesus' life when he is transformed. And they're filled with arguments about all kinds of things. Why did Moses and Elijah appear? Why does he take Peter, James, and John with him and not everybody else? Why does he go up a mountain? Who's in the cloud? Why is the cloud speaking? Is the cloud really speaking, or is it what they think the cloud is saying? And is this the moment that Jesus moves from being Jesus of Nazareth to Jesus the Christ? We do not have 6 months to discuss that right now. Those things all take time. But I think that for me anyway, as I the more and more, maybe because I do get to preach this so often on this Sunday, I think more and more what I'm starting to understand about the Transfiguration, it's not so much that we are supposed to be dazzled by Jesus' robes turning white and his face glowing and the fact that Moses and Elijah appear. I think we're actually supposed to be, like Peter, James, and John, witnesses to Jesus' personal moment of transformation. He's been doing some ministry, and people are paying attention. I mean, 5,000 men plus the women and children turn up for a meal that wasn't planned. And there's some moment, I think, in there, like this massive moment he has when he has that meal with them all, where he suddenly has to make a decision. And so he goes up the mountain to pray. And in that moment of going up the mountain to pray, what I think he's actually, my personal interpretation, is that I think what he's actually doing is he's going up to make a decision. He's going up to decide, am I going to do this or not? In the ancient world, in the time and place that Jesus was living, there were lots of rabbis and teachers and miracle workers going around doing things. But his teaching, his miracles were starting to attract attention. And I think he needed to go up there and decide, am I going to follow through on this? Am I going to move into this ministry? Or am I going to pull back? Just before he goes up the mountain, he's already for the first time predicted that he will die. And so this is the moment where he has to decide, do I go forward and face everything, including my death? Or do I not do it? Do I give it up and step away? And in that time of prayer, of course, we have the disciples witness this experience of the law of Moses and Elijah appearing with him. And if you do research around this, what they say is that is the understanding that in Jesus there is the completion of the law and all that the prophets have said. And that gives him authority. But in some ways, it's the voice from the cloud that gives him more authority. Because the cloud, the voice in the cloud says, this is my son. This is my chosen one. Jesus has gone there, prayed, and now has accepted the role that he is called to. And when he accepts it, there's almost like an anointing by God that says, this is my chosen one. This is my son. When we as Christians, as we as people of faith, think about the transfiguration, it is this kind of blaze of glory and wonder. But there are so many moments of ordinary transformation for us in our lives as people of faith. Most of us in this room probably don't remember our baptism. We were probably baptized as babies. And if you remember that moment, wow. Some of you might have been baptized as young adults or even as adults. Lots of you will have gone through confirmation class and kind of did a declaration of your faith at that point. And one of those may have been the moment where you decided that this was the life for you, to be a person of faith who followed Jesus. And for some of us, it's a daily decision. We get up every morning and go, are we stepping into this battle or are we just going to go home? Because sometimes being people of faith feels a bit like a battle. It feels sometimes, especially if, well, it depends on your understanding of Jesus, but my interpretation of Jesus, I feel like sometimes I am battling against an image of Jesus that is not the Jesus on the mountain who comes down and heals the sick and preaches the good news. And so we make a daily choice to step into the transformational love of Jesus. We make a choice to follow him. And some days it feels like a hard choice. But the sense of being transformed by Christ's love in our lives can feel so overwhelming that maybe we have no choice but to be transformed. And in our transformation, we transform all that is around us. People are transformed by how we behave and how we speak and what we offer into the world. What's interesting in this time and place, in this world we're living in, that's not necessarily the Jesus that's being taught. The Jesus that's being taught is a Jesus of me and Jesus are all good, so I don't have to worry about the rest of y'all. I don't have to serve the poor, feed the hungry, care for the refugee. It's just about me and Jesus. And it's not that we all don't have a personal relationship with Jesus, but when we see Jesus go up and have that moment of personal relationship with God in the mountain, and he comes down, he moves into this ministry that just every step of it leads him to his death. That's the Jesus that transforms my life. The Jesus that comes down the mountain, shows God's powerful love by curing this young boy, and then stepping out into the dangers of having even done that. To show people that he will speak and behave in a way that will transform their lives, but will also challenge those who fail to be transformed or who are unwilling to be transformed. And interestingly enough, in Jesus' time and place, that's mostly those who are in power. And he speaks to them, and in speaking to them of the transformative power of God's love, and to say that God's kingdom does not look the way you are presenting, but rather this is how God's love and kingdom looks, he is killed. Our experience of being transformed by God informs our every moment of our lives, how we speak, how we act, who we care for. Our transformative experience of Jesus turns us into people who feed the hungry and fight for the rights of refugees, who fight for the rights of those who are on the margins of society because of their gender orientation. Our transformation of Christ is not simply about I'm all good with Jesus. It is about not only am I good with Jesus, but I'm going to take on the burden of continuing to transform the world as he would want it to be. And we do that in so many ordinary ways. We do it by simply being the people that we are called to be. We do it by offering a glass of water to those who thirst, a meal to those who hunger, and shelter to those who are without homes. We do it by fighting for the rights of those who feel they have no voice in the world, and we do it by standing up to tyranny and evil. And it can get us killed. Standing up may not actually get us physically killed, but it may make us feel like we are being yelled at and told to shut up and sit down. It can feel sometimes like we are being criticized for not being good Christians because we stand up for the rights of others, who some would see as being a burden upon God, or who are contrary to God's beliefs. My favorite argument often is, biblical marriage. That's my favorite argument. I love that. I love getting pulled into that fight. And people will say, biblical marriage is one man, one woman. I'm like, and the concubines and the handmaids and the... Oh, and by the way, we used to laugh about this argument when I was married, and I would, I'd turn around to my dad and say, "Look, you still haven't had any goats or sheep for me." He was very mad about that. He never got his goats and sheep in exchange for me. There is no such thing. And when we start turn around and transform the world into a place where we realize that those things are not important and those things are actually used to suppress others, then we start to transform it. We start to change it into a place where love is the most powerful weapon we have. And we do it in ordinary, small, simple ways. By speaking up, by standing beside someone who is feeling persecuted, by making space for those whose voices do not get heard enough. And we lead the road to Jerusalem. When I say that, when I preach, people go, it wasn't fun for Jesus when he got to Jerusalem. That did not end well. But we are resurrection people. Love still won. On the third day, the tomb was empty, and love won. The power of God that was shown in the curing and the healing of the boy rises once again, even when they killed Jesus off. Once we start to transform the world with love, there is no stopping us. Once that ball gets rolling, we will never stop it. It cannot be stopped because it is so powerful, it beats even death. So when I think about this passage, when I think about the transfiguration, I love all of the academic arguments about, this is when Jesus became Jesus of Christ, not when he died, not when he was born. This was the moment. Fully human, no longer divine. Fully divine, no longer human. I love all of those arguments. I will sit for hours and have those. But I think what's really important is that Jesus made a decision. And we are called to make that decision every day. How will I live out my life of faith? How will I live out God's love? And I think it's a really important question today. I think we really need to think about it and then commit to it. Because even if it did ever lead us to Jerusalem, it will never, ever be the end of the story, for we are resurrection people.